Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the Palin Thing Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget, for all your fine quality kayak fishing accessories. Go to yakgadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting. Go to pelican.com. And the 153 Bait Company, for all your hard and soft bait needs. Go to the 153angler.com. So join with me as together we dive into the tips and techniques that will help make us better anglers out on the water. Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin podcast. I am your host of the Noob Show, Sean Lavery, and thanks again for joining us this week, guys. We're continuing on with our series on kind of winter or cold water fishing. Last week, if you guys remember, we had John Toast Oates from Fish Hacker on. We talked some hair jigs, and tonight I'm bringing back another gentleman who was on the Noob Show a while back. Happy to have him back. So welcome back to the Noob Show, Jeff Little.
How hey, are you Sean. This
doing? You doing good? I am doing pretty good this evening.
Yeah, doing well. Was actually out on the river yesterday and kind of dialing in a couple feeding stations where, you have your winter holes where a lot of fish gather together, but within the winter holes, there's certain places that like, there's just a big concentration of fish. And if you're new to winter fishing, the kind of day I had yesterday is very common where I got there and I fished in one section for till I think 1 o'clock, didn't have a bite. And said, nope, just not feeling it here. Still trying to figure out in this new area, where do these fish, congregate in the winter? And typically it's your slower current areas. And there's one thing that really helps you figure it out is if you see it at flood stage. And if there is a place that they can jump up on the bank, like a creek mouth or a steep bank with a little notch in it where they can step out of the way of the river as it's blasting past with ice and mud and trailer homes, that, they have that place nearby. And I'm trying to figure it out in one spot. And I've had success there on some recent trips. I've been filming there on recent trips with my buddy Jake Harshman. And just a little after one, I'm like, it's not happening here. And I have some things to teach on the YouTube channel. And I went back to a known winter hole and, went to a feeding station, place where I know from years past there's going to be some fish, caught one, pulled up to the second feeding station that I know from years past and really sat there. And I think I hammered out 8 of them in a row.
Wow.
And that's common. It was middle to late afternoon and to get on a spot and get a bite. And I was throwing a hair jig. If you get one bite, you're in the right spot, just sit there and hammer on them and be patient. Let it sit. And you know, very much. I'm gonna grab a jig here. This is when I was just tying before Sean and I started this. And I've been throwing. Well, I'm gonna grab the hair jigs first. I've been tying hair jigs, and I tie them sparse. I got a whole mess of them. I don't know if you can see that.
Okay, yeah. That's definitely very not as goofy as the ones we were playing with yesterday. Yeah.
that's 16th ounce. So it's a football head. And I'll put a little 2-inch soft plastic on there with little twin tail. I got a video coming on that showing my manufacturing of them. If there's a little bit more current and I'm fishing on a current seam, I'll jump out to, that's the eighth. If the river is up and it's really moving, I will jump to a quarter. I snag these a lot, and there is something to your presentation that makes them snag less.
I'd be all ears about that as well. Is that coming in a video?
Yeah.
Because I definitely am interested in snagging less, because I do.
Yeah.
So anytime I throw an open hook like that, I tend to snag a lot.
Here's the concept. Pendulum swing. I'm gonna see if I can. This is unconventional. So when you cast out, Sean, say you're throwing a Ned rig, right?
Right.
And it's a pretty lightweight, not real snaggy. I mean, you can snag them. And you see a spot that you're like, yeah, I like that. I think there's some fish in there. How far into the cast, and you've just put it out there, do you flip the bail?
I try and let the line settle, but I'm not always super patient with that. So, because I think we talked to Online Outdoorsman, and he was the first one who told me that he doesn't close his bail until the line is completely settled.
I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
Here's why. And this is weird because I got my tying bob in here, and I just tied the hair jig on there.
There, I can see it.
Right. You see that?
Yep.
So this is actually an untied hair jig. The concept of a pendulum swing, what I'm going to tell you to do, Sean, you put it out there and maybe let it fall a little bit. Maybe you flip the bail right away.
Okay.
And it starts dropping, and you have it on taut line because I'm trying to figure out where the camera is. There we are. It's coming down like this on taut line, and then it goes bump, and it hits the bottom like that with that hook upright. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down and hits the bottom like that, it's just more like less likely to snag. Whereas if you put it out there and it goes straight down, it finds all of those little crags and cracks. It gets down in there and it wedges, and you're done. You gotta paddle over to it and lift it up, or in my case, hit the throttle.
Motor over it. Yeah. Yep.
Anyhow, pendulum swing does two things for you. One, it's just less snaggy. It really is. Two, if they're hitting it, and sometimes they do on this descent coming down like this and just swinging, you're going to feel that hit, especially with a hair jig that's fairly lightweight. You know, as it has that slow rate of fall, and you have the pendulum swing that's kicking it over, when one of them jams it in open space, you know that you can feel it because you have taut line,
right?
Yeah. I told you I was going to refer to the YouTube channel a lot. It's called The Little Stuff. And I've been putting a lot more content into it because I've been since the Kayak Bass Fishing National Championship, I've been home pretty much. And I'm getting ready to travel again next week, running up to Torquedo headquarters in Chicago. But I've been home for like 6 weeks, I think. And I've just been hammering, getting out there as much as I can on local waters and just cranking out video. And I have stuff scheduled into, you know, into December and even early January. But some of the ones I've done recently, I did a short one called Downsizing the Baits as the Water Cools. That was just Jake and I talking about, you know, smaller profiled stuff in the cold water. There's one on December 5th. It is five tips to feel the cold water bass bite. Now, we filmed it the other week and the river was up and it was still like low 40s, right? So It was cooling off. It wasn't fully cold. Yesterday was cold. Yesterday I had water temperature that was, I think we started out at 36.8.
Wow.
And okay. It got up to like 38.6 by the end of the day. So it was below 40. And that's getting there. But there are certain tricks that will help you feel the bite. And the most important thing is to have a taut line. And what another thing that I like to do to make sure that I do not have slack in my line is I double anchor. That's another video that's coming. December 20th, you know, double anchor setup. Make sure you feel the bite. So you have to get yourself stationary. Even if it's you hopping up on the bank, if you have a pool and you're like, I think they're here, but maybe you dropped one anchor off the front and the kayak is just swinging in the wind or the current or whatever, as you're swinging this way towards where you just cast, what's slack happening with your line?
Yeah. You'll have slack introduced. Yep.
Yeah. In fact, you know what? I do my illustrations, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the videos, I got a couple that might be helpful.
I wish I could make your screen bigger and mine smaller, and I'm not sure how I switch that. Hold on a second. Shift S. Oop, that's not what I wanted. I want to make yours bigger.
I got four of these from recent.
There I go.
Yeah, now I'm full screen, right?
Yep.
Okay. So, generally, we say that, is that centered?
There slack, you go.
Slack is the enemy, okay? So, in this picture, I have a rear anchor, and I have wind that's pushing me in that direction. And when I cast out there, I let it pendulum swing down to the, there it is, the bottom, and that top line being straight is ideal. But if wow, this is counterintuitive to me. If the wind is pushing you in this direction, all of a sudden, this is what your line looks like, and it's slack. You have that bow in the line.
Right.
If where's my fish? That fish hits on that slack line, you don't feel it. So what do you got to do? You use a rear anchor when the wind is at your back and pushing you to keep from, you know, just to make sure that you don't have slack in the line.
Gotcha.
It works a lot of different ways. There's a number of things that can help, that can hurt you with regard to having slack in the line. All right. Again, I do these are in my... These are in my, I do these illustrations at the end of the video to help people out, to help wrap it up so that they understand. Things that put slack in the line, the river's current. So if you're casting across a little current chute and it's putting a bow in your line, that's no good. Wind itself can act as, you know, to put a bow in your line. It can move your boat so you get closer to, you know, to where you just cast and then you don't feel it. When we filmed some of the footage here recently, the river was up at you know, above 7 feet, and we had a lot of leaves swirling around. Some leaves, you know, like you get a twig or something that is very small, and that comes to rest on your, you think it's taut line, and you have a fish hitting your line down there, and you're just not going to feel it. So things that you do to fight that, solutions to maintain line tension. You can use a heavier weight, but you snag more. You can actually do shorter casts, which really help you out. And then you, the lighter the fishing line, lighter fishing line, braid. Oh, braid is wonderful. I still maintain 20-pound test in the winter, but it's the same thing for jigging for striper down deep. I've gone down to like to 15 to jig and catch, you know, 40-plus inch striped bass. I know that, that's crazy, but you have a tidal current flowing and you have a 1-ounce jig 50 feet down and you're trying to follow that rod tip down as you lower the jig and you want to feel the instant that thing gets it. The light line makes a difference. Braid really does help. But when you start getting ice in your guides in the winter, it can soak in there and really stick to, especially the nice St. Croix rods I use, the micro guides in them. It's frustrating. Got a video coming on too, but I'll give you the quick version. I use chapstick on the tip guide.
Okay. I
use real snot. Scylla Johnson actually got me using the real snot. I used to use real, I think it was called Real Magic.
Okay.
The real snot is a little more viscous and it lasts you all day. It's good stuff. But it keeps the ice from forming. They're oil-based and wax-based, respectively. The chapstick on the tip guide really just helps the ice from forming, and then it doesn't get to the rest of your guides. It gets knocked off there. But I will switch to straight fluoro once I know, hey, I'm going out on a day where the water temp is or the air temp's not going to be above freezing much of the day. Straight fluoro, you know, I think I've 8 on the one I was using yesterday. You really got to play them well, though. Here's the cool thing, though. If you're using, and this is one of the, you know, the jig heads that I poured with the Do It mold. It's an Owner 5318 hook. I think that one's a size 2. It is such a fine wire hook. As soon as that fish, and I say it's a hair jig, or I've put a little tiny tube or small soft plastic on there, you know, they basically, they get it in their mouth. Of course, it didn't work when I wanted it to, but basically, you know, it touches some part of them and it's in them. You know, I didn't have to push real hard on the side of my hand to get that jig, that point to stick. And as soon as they start moving, because it's such a fine wire hook, it's going to get in them. A fine wire hook is going to catch you more fish than feeling the bite, right? It's going to catch fish that you don't deserve to catch. And by that, I mean like, okay, felt the hit, whack. Okay, now set the hook. No, it'll just, you know, it'll just be there.
By the time you know you have the fish, it's already set the hook. You don't have to do it.
Yeah. So I feel like I've jumped way ahead, though, in terms of, you know, the assumption that, like, that you would know a good place to start. Right,
right.
And what to do. And honestly, the what to do, I'm most successful when I put a jig in – the same thing with the jerk bait, suspending jerk bait that will drift. I actually like one that sinks at a super slow rate. It's tough to get one that, you know, out of the package truly suspends. And I think it's water temperature dependent. If a suspending jerk bait out of the package floats, I just don't use it.
Right.
Like this motion on a suspending jerk bait, I don't get fish to eat that.
Right. It's not natural. But
look at my finger. Up. Look at my finger. Dead sticking. And coming down super slowly to rest, and maybe there's some fluorocarbon line, which is heavy a little bit, and is like leading it slowly to the bottom. This dead stick that where eventually, and I'm gonna fast forward, it comes to rest on the bottom, and its nose is just barely on the bottom, but the rest of it kind of breathes and maybe pivots a little bit. Man, is that deadly. It's deadly. It catches those big smallmouth in cold water. And I think I just had one video that came out that I got a nice one doing that, but dead sticking a suspending jerk bait and specifically let it go all the way to the bottom and fishing it like it is bait. Same thing with a hair jig. And how long do I let it sit? It's such a, if that's where you're at with it, go to a place where you think there's fish. Okay. Do this. Go to where you were catching them in late October, early November. Cause by then they were on their way, you know, towards where they're going to winter, right? Slow pools, deeper water. Yes. There are some winter pools that are shallow in places where they winter, where it's shallow. I mean, relatively shallow, like the lowest it's going to get is like 4 or 5 feet. Some of the best ones are super deep, but go to where you were catching them in late fall, right? Slather up a jerk bait or a hair jig with some scent. Wing it out there. We're all addicted to social media, right? Are you?
I have trouble putting it down. Yeah.
Well, put your jerk bait out there and pull out the old Facebook and just start scrolling through and see. Oh, here's my friend catching a big striper. Okay, you know what I'm saying? You just forget about it. Put it out there and get your line taut. And like, look up in the trees and check out the kingfisher that's up there. You know, making noise at you. Look over on the rocks to your right and check out all the little stoneflies that are crawling all over the leaves on the bank. Yeah, go ahead. Look at your phone. But just stop trying to animate whatever it is that you put out there. Because this is it. This is what you need to get for winter fishing. This is it. You ready? You are setting a trap, not enticing a bite. That's it. Okay. So your best baits are going to have a sort of built-in subtle action where if it's sitting still, I just mentioned it with the jerk bait. What's the jerk bait doing? It's kind of pivoting on the bottom. Yeah. Yeah. It's nose down. And if a big fish moves in on that, what's it going to do? You haven't moved it. What's it going to do? It stinks. It smells because you just slathered like the shad scent liquid mayhem all over it, right? It smells right. But the push of water coming off that bass's body is going to make that jerk bait just kind of like pivot a little bit.
Ever so slightly, right.
And that's all you need. I tied this right before, and this is I've been doing well with these. The trailer is the Z-Man Batwings 2.75. Okay. It's a chunk trailer, right? But it's one of the smaller ones. Even this is kind of big for winter fishing. I got that football head. It's an 1/8 ounce. I got that fine wire hook and I got a little bit of a skirt material tied on there, right? The Elastec, the Z-Man, super durable, but it floats. It floats up like a TRD or whatever. With it just sitting there on the bottom, and I love getting the underwater footage on my videos, it just sits there like this, and it just kind of wavers back and forth like that. Like, you can't make it stop moving. It's not going anywhere, but it'll never stop moving.
Right.
It's not traveling anywhere, but you can't keep it still. If you have that in a bait, And yes, a hair jig is one of them. If you have that in a bait, you have a good winter bait. And you have to have faith that I've put it there, and if a fish finds it, comes across it, he's going to eat it. Okay?
So you're really looking for very little current movement at that point, I would think, right? Because otherwise it could be kind of dragging that a little bit.
Yeah, and that leads into this illustration. So I did this video that explained how you really assess the eddy. I'm trying to get that centered. So you look at the current speed, you look at the current direction, and you can look at depth by throwing your jig out there and seeing the angle of your line. And you're going to feel the bottom. If the jig feels like it's on a hard bottom, that's good. If it's bringing back leaves and stuff, that's not good. You do not want to be in the leaf litter zone, is what I refer to it as. But, you know, it was my buddy Jed Plunkert, Jake, and myself were working this one eddy in the green still water area in the center of what I refer to as the center of the donut hole. That's your stillest water. And you can see the arrows of the water, you know, slowly cycling. It was actually... the bottom of the screen was one of the banks, right? Then up here where my finger is was a bridge piling, and Jake had actually anchored up there, and he was casting down towards what I refer to as the split. So in the center, there's two still areas, and, you know, really the red spots are kind of like the feeding stations. They can be in the turn of the inside of the seam where it turns, you know, this is so backwards for me. It comes along here to the bank and then it comes back out to the current seam. And that little red dot is a good feeding station. The split right along the bank is another one. The most downstream part of the eddy, as it pinches off here and it ceases to become an eddy, that's another good one. And probably the most obvious and aggressive fish is going to be right up at that current seam, but they're still in still water.
Right.
You know, there's screaming fast water here, but like right there, that's an alpha, hey, I'm looking to eat fish location. And if you can put one there, you're in an eddy, and you can put it right up at the top. Yeah, that's if something's looking to eat, that's going to be a good spot for it. But here's the thing, though. If you're hitting it cold, so to speak, and I did a little bit of it yesterday. I've been working with Jake on a pool where he's like, I'd love to know where they winter in this area. And I went with him once, and then I went on my own and had some success then there, but it was limited. I think I caught like four. And then yesterday I went and like I fished until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, I got nothing. And you know, 2.5 trips isn't enough to dial it in. The places where I've learned over the years that, hey, these are good winter spots, I did the process. So the process is something that I included in my first or in one of my DVDs on winter river smallmouth fishing, which don't look for the DVD. I sold a bunch of them, but all of that content is actually, if you rabbit hole and look through the river or look through the smallmouth playlist on the YouTube channel, on the little stuff, you're going to find all those different videos. I got to find it for you, but there is a process by which you find these winter holes. Let me see if I go to playlist. There's a lot of playlists. My smallmouth one alone, if I can find it, Are you pulling it up?
Yep, I can let's see here.
I don't know why it's not giving me all of them, but Winter River smallmouth process. Man, I feel like I just slowed everything down by looking for this.
Smallmouth, there it is. Let's see here.
Whoop. There's so much content there.
There is a lot. Let's see.
Here's little tubes for Winter River smallmouth. I should have had this queued up. I'm not going to find it. It's got the word process in the description.
Okay.
If you find it, what I do is it's another one of these illustrations, but I actually use a place where I figured out, hey, this is a winter hole. The process is you fish the same water every month, a couple times a month, as you go from September into December and then January. And what you find is, you know, and I'm going to use, let's see if I can do this. Say the river is flowing from there down to this corner, right? And it's going to have the normal curves. But say in September, you have fish. So fairly spread out, maybe two gaps, but overall there's three kind of sections of a lot of fish. And then in October you go down and you're like fish. And then it's nothing for a while, fish, and then fish, and then nothing for a long time. And then it's fish in the last three quarter mile, right? So they've condensed a little bit. They've been spread out, and then water's cooling off a little bit. And then you get into November and it goes nothing. Fish. Nothing. Fish, nothing. Fish. And then nothing the rest of the way. So what did you find? Three different places. One of them only had one fish, but two sections had a bunch of them in one area. Then you get into December, and I can't really show you that as well, but you go right to that bank of that pool and you figure out, okay, early in the day on that current seam, nothing is there. I tried, but I get down towards the end of that eddy or that big pool, and I caught like three or four. And it was in the last little bit. And then, you know, you say you even stay all day on that pool, but then late in the day, you go back up to the top of the eddy at that current seam, that red dot that I put up against the piling in that illustration. And it's like the last 20 minutes of daylight. And even after the sun is set, and it's just like big fish. And that's a feeding station. That is what you hope to get dialed in late November this time of year. Because when you hit it in January and February, you know, there's going to be places where they go, where they zone out. And maybe if you let a Ned rig wallow down there long enough, something's going to jam it. But there are places where you go and you say, hey, if in this pool there's a fish that's looking for food, he's going to look here. And if he's not there, he's going to be at this other place. And you really figure that out with the water temperatures, you know, in the upper to mid 40s. By the time you get down to 40 in the upper 30s, their feeding windows are more narrow. They're still going to eat.
Right.
But if you've dialed in the process, you know, and a lot of the work of it is noticing which are the areas that are increasingly more active the end of October and early November. And then which of the areas just didn't produce. So that's the process. And it's on the YouTube channel. You got to just dig. You find the smallmouth playlist and just look through there. I'm still, you know, I have over 500 videos on the YouTube channel, right? And I cover a lot of different stuff from offshore kayak fishing to striped bass and largemouth and tidal largemouth in particular, and certainly a lot of smallmouth. And, you know, there's trout and there's torpedo stuff and there's kayak rigging and there's just your conservation. And I go all over the place, but a lot of my old school videos are in there and just don't get watched because of the way Facebook is. And because I guess I never, you know, back then when I just, you know, I uploaded so much. I mean, I had content that I'd put on kayak bass fishing, you know, in 2009, right?
Right.
I put on Kayak Angler's YouTube channel. I put on the Wilderness Systems when I was on their team and managed their team and put stuff up there. I fed a lot of other people's channels early on. And at some point, my buddy Chad was like, just consolidate, put it all in one place and start, you know, gaining, you know, the momentum with it. And I never really paid attention to it in a way that YouTube has evolved, where you have to be good at thumbnails and tag words and you know, putting the little things on the screen at the end saying, "Where, watch this video next." I'm just now learning that. And as a consequence, my old stuff doesn't get watched. But if you
right, it falls into that black hole.
It's out there. You got to dig, and please subscribe.
Definitely. Oh, the amount of content out there alone is worth subscribing. But like you said, I mean, the way it's broken down on the playlist, it's almost perfect. I was just looking through, browsing while I was looking for that process video while you were talking, and I marked like a ton that I want to go back and follow or check out, because yep. There was a ton. The what makes a good wintering hole and all sorts of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So definitely, guys, go online and check it out for sure.
That I learned in 2001 was, I think, my first winter where I fished into the winter. And it was a friend of mine, Brian, that took me on the main stem Shenandoah. And he's like, you know, I think he was the second other person that I met that fished out of a kayak. So I started fishing out of a kayak in 98. I ran into him maybe in 2000, and I'd fished with him a good bit here and there. Mainstem Shenandoah, he had a property up on the South Branch, and we do a lot on the North Fork Shenandoah and parts of the Potomac. He lived there near Harper's Ferry, and we fished a lot together. But when he talked about, "Yeah, I'm going, you know, next weekend. Are you?" I'm like, "You can catch them this late?" He's like, "You don't winter fish?" I'm like, "No, I've never thought." He's like, "You are so missing out." And I'm like, "Well, I keep catching fewer and fewer fish." He's like, "You're going to catch the biggest ones of the year in winter. You've got to," you know, I'm like, "Help me out, man." Cause like I, you know, on the Potomac, you know, I do that Brunswick to Point of Rocks float, and just, you know, in October, I'm whacking them, I'm catching them. And then, you know, mid November, it's like, I'm struggling to catch like four in a day. He's like, mm-hmm. "Yeah, you're just not in the right spots, and maybe you're fishing too fast." And he took me to a spot in the West Virginia section of the mainstem Shenandoah. And what he had said to me, you know, we paddled probably 3/4 of a mile. And I made a couple casts. He's like, stop. Don't do that. I'm like, well, how are we going to? He's like, just come with me. Keep coming. Keep coming. And then we got to a spot and he's like, okay, do you see that, you know, that rock that makes the head of the eddy? I'm like, yeah. He's like, do you see that sycamore tree with the root ball right there? I'm like, yeah. And it maybe was, you know, 35 yard section of bank. He's like, you're not fishing anything until you catch a fish between that rock and that sycamore. I'm like, he's like, they're there. I'm like, okay, I believe you. And I think that day, I think I got a 19 1/4 was the first one. And it popped a tube in a way that it was just like, I mean, it just felt so good. And that's the addiction. Jig fishing. I mean, anything where you leave it on the bottom and they just like a gunshot whack it is just so good. God, it feels good. That one hit and it just snowballed. And I think that day I caught like, I think that was the biggest was the first, but then there was a whole mess of like 18 1/4, 18 3/4, 18 1/2. There was a lot of really good fish in the mix. And I don't know. I think I probably caught 8 fish by the end of the day, but they were good. They were good, solid fish. And I was getting it because I had somebody that said, you know, there's lots of places on this float trip, but here's what I'm giving you. Between that rock and that sycamore tree, you're not moving from here. And I know he went down the bank and I saw him and I heard him hoot and holler. I'm like, you want me to come down? He's like, don't leave that spot.
All right.
He caught a bigger fish. Yeah. I think he got a 20 3/4 that day.
Okay.
He's like, no, that's where I needed you to be. And I got it. And I took that experience and knowledge and kind of understood and tried to find other places like it on the Rappahannock, on the North Fork Shenandoah. The Susquehanna and the Juniata didn't come until later, but like I figured those out too. You know, and ultimately what you're looking for is a big enough area where little foam bubbles on the surface, stop passing through. They just sit. They don't swirl. And sometimes the only way you're going to know that is if you get yourself stopped. And that's why I advocate, and I have that video coming about my double anchor system. If you're anchoring, you got to have the knife on the PFD because you got to be able to cut it. If you do something stupid like I did at 23 years old and anchor in the wrong spot and had to rely on someone else to save my life for me, you got to have that knife on your life jacket. I have the NRS co-pilot. But when you anchor and you do it in still water and you have still water out in front of you and you know that you're stopped and you just gaze at the surface of the water, just throw a Ned rig or a hair jig or the, you know what else is a good product? You know, I make a lot of my own stuff, but I always like to tell people something you can buy. These guys, I got a pile of them there. I guess just restocked. Shrooms, micro finesse jigs. These things with that trailer is a great place to start. I also use the smaller scented jerk shads, and I use those heads, those yep. finesse bullets.
Yeah, I just grabbed. I thought I had some finesse jerk shads in my Z-Man binder, but I didn't. So I saw that in that latest video that you talked about for when you're pulling a lot of leaves with the regular jerk bait, you can switch to one of those. And
yeah, it has the same presentation where I talk about it just sitting on the bottom and just kind of pivoting. Like it's a great, great bait. But if you get that on the bottom, in the stillest section, and you can kind of pull your reel and pull back on it, and you just scratch the bottom. If it feels hard and it's under bubbles that are sitting still, that's it. If you put it in under bubbles that are sitting still and you pull on it, you're just like, it's just, I don't feel rock. And then you reel it in, there's a leaf on it. No, leave that alone. The leaf litter zone is where the carp live. Leave it alone. You know, and usually I got to do an illustration on this, but you know, say the screen that I'm in is the eddy. The leaf litter zone is going to be right in the middle, but here on the edges near the current, like your fastest current is just off screen up here, but like you will have an edge here where it's a hard bottom on the edge of the leaf litter zone, and that'll still be productive.
Okay.
But you do have to just go do it and explore and keep your line taut and have fine wire hooks. The two products I just showed you have fine wire hooks. You know, you don't have to, I mean, the next video I have to edit is me pouring these jig heads and making my own soft plastics. You don't have to do that. I enjoy doing that. I used to do that, you know, for my little side gig, making them for Confidence Baits, and I just burned out on doing that. But I don't know. There's lots of good bait companies out there that offer a fine wire hook. So
I'm kind of excited to hear you say that, because this is the first year that I feel like I've fished my local area, the Susquehanna, pretty much like you said. I fished it all fall, and I was catching fish right up until kind of 2 weeks ago, and then it's kind of really dropped off for me. And I was fishing, trying to get out twice a week, so I know where I was catching them in September and October.
Keep fishing those areas. Just find the spots in... Find the spots that the current just stops, that they can just not work real hard to stay in. You know, that is a good part of it. You know, if you got to look at it in terms of they're an animal that lives on a treadmill. That river just keeps them, you know, keeps them working. And, you know, if they can take their legs off of the actual treadmill and put them on the sides and take a rest, those sides, those are the eddies. Those are the calm water pockets where they can take a break. But, you know, the river comes up and we get a lot of rain, or we get a big snow melt and it just blows out a bunch of, you know, it's pretty obvious where they're going to be. They're going to be in those shoreline eddies. They're going to jump up in the creek mouths. But they want to be close to those places that they can get out of the way. And I usually, you know, when I find a concentration of them in late October and in early and mid November, and I'm like, okay, let's visually look around here and put another 10 to 12 feet of water in this river. Where do they go? And usually you look up on the bank, you're like, oh yeah, you guys go up in there. There's like a little creek mouth notch here. There's a steep bank right here. And they're out in this trench where it's like, you know, between 8 and 12 feet out here. And they're happy doing that at like regular flow. But when it gets blown out, they go up onto that bank and into that little creek mouth notch. You know, and there are high water spots and in low water spots for the winter holes, but the distance between the two is not very far, because there'll be areas that are big, you know, that have a lot of that foam bubble on the surface that it's not moving, but they got to run a long way to find that high water refuge. They don't, you know, ideally they don't want to do that. So, but Sean, keep going back to your places that you're getting them in October. There are fish around there somewhere.
No, and I like what you said too about the feeding stations, because that makes a lot of sense. Because if you can find one, even if it's not, you hit it like when you first get on the water and they're not there. The important thing is to cycle back to figure out what time of day they are hitting that feeding station, because you know they'll go hang out in their spots where they're just kind of chilling out, but they will return to that feeding station.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit easier when the river's higher, because the places that they can comfortably be in shrink. You know, when it's yesterday it was, I mean, it's at a fairly low level. I don't want to say low, but it's not up much at all right now.
No.
They're spread out. I talked to a buddy of mine, Mike Breeding, who's a jet boat guide up there, ran into him yesterday in exchanged some Facebook messages back and forth today. And I'm going to get on the water with him, not this coming week, but the week after when I come back from Chicago. I'm going to hop on his jet boat and do an episode with him and capture some of Mike's knowledge. Mike's, you know, full-time guide up there. And he, if you follow him, it's his business is called Grateful Guides. And he will, you'll go out there in skunk and be like, I just don't get it. Why, you know, and then you'll see his trip report and he'll say, yeah, between my client and I, we got 68 bass today. And you're like, you're lying. No, no. I've done it with him and I'm going to do it week after next. And the jet boat's a great way to go hop from his vast knowledge of so many different feeding stations that he's figured out over the years. It's the same thing with Jason Shea's another one. Chris Gorsuch is probably the person I'd say knows more than any other guide up there on the Susquehanna.
I have a trip scheduled with him in April, I think. So
you do.
With Chris.
It's hard to get on his books.
No, I had Chris him here Gorsuch. On here as a guest, and he told me to call him when he opened his books for 2021 or 2022.
You lucked out. You lucked out, and you need to like prep for that trip, and you need to have like a list of what you want to learn from him.
No, I've talked to him quite huge. A few times. Yep.
Yeah. Chris, I love fishing with Chris. Chris is also a guy that gets the kayak fishing thing. Yes, he's a jet boat guide, but he was one of the Wilderness Systems pro staffers when I managed that team, because he understands like how great a tool the kayak is for getting in certain places that like and having the stealth to get after him in summer. He's a paddler.
No, and that's one of the reasons why I, you know, out of all the guides that I had talked to, I kind of picked him, because he talked about kayaking and I fully intend on picking his brain on that as well while we're out on the jet boat. So
cool. Yeah, I'm glad you got a trip. I was gonna say he's like, good luck getting a trip with him.
But no, I know. I definitely
must have really enjoyed talking to you to make sure that he made a slot for you, because he gets his regulars and they're full. I mean,
right.
That's sort of the evolution of the guide. I mean, when someone's new to it, they hustle and they do all the outdoor shows and they do the speaking engagement for any Trout Unlimited or other group that will have them come be a speaker, and they hustle to talk to the manager at the Harrisburg show to say, you know, hey, can you work me in to be on the tank and do a talk on whatever. And, you know, they do a lot to promote, and that's the early guide, you know, evolution. And then they get to a point where they have their regular amount of regulars that keep coming back to them. But they're still trying to fill out, you know, a full schedule to make a living at it. My buddy Chuck Earls, who's up he's up near Cleveland, but he's kayak fishing guide on Lake Erie. He's in that early stage where he's hustling, and he's good at at working and promoting. And if you wanted to ever, you know, get up there and do some Great Lakes trolling for the walleye, or even this time of year, the steelhead, if you have a dry suit, he'd probably let you book a trip with him. But he's in that early phase of, you know, of hustling to get it done. And then when you've really made it and you just, you know, and I've seen it in river smallmouth guides, you know, further south in Appalachia. Chuck Kraft was another one, or Jeff Kelby when he was guiding, where it's just, you know, and it's usually like, hey, the week after Thanksgiving, gonna open up this calendar, call my regulars, spend maybe a day, maybe 2 days calling people, and it's full.
It's full, right.
And they don't have a website anymore. They don't need it. They don't want it. They got their regulars. They just do their job. And maybe if somebody gets sick the night before and he says, I'll put you on a wait list, and then he calls you and said, okay, yeah, this guy dropped off. Can you go tomorrow? And you think, am I calling off?
Better. Yep, you better.
So it's cool you got there with Chris. So
yeah, cool. I was very happy about that. So now I'm just trying to pick who I want to bring with me.
Yep. Yeah, and April's a good time for sure.
Awesome, man. Well, I will definitely, I'm going to do some searching here after we get done, and I will find that process video and put a link to that, as well as the last couple that I watched with you and Jake, because I think those are super good too. Any other ones you can think off the top of your head I should include?
Let me talk about what's upcoming.
Okay.
You know, I've done a more purposeful job in scheduling, scheduling content. I have to go to YouTube Studio to figure it out, but December, and it jumps around. This one's a tidal largemouth one, but December 13th is called Toehold, one piece of the cold water largemouth puzzle. On December 3rd, the first illustration I showed you, slackline is the enemy, how to feel the bite in cold water. December 20th is the double anchor setup. I do have some rod building or rod repair videos with a local guy, Kevin Hallash, who does the he does electric only tournaments here in Maryland.
Okay.
December 6th is another video or another illustration that I showed you earlier, is eddy breakdown or eddy assessment breakdown of current depth and something else. December 5th, five tips to feel the cold water bass bite. That one.
That
December
really
5th. You find it on there. I have it scheduled as a premiere. Mm-hmm. I think you do something where you click like notify when it's up, or like a reminder or something.
And that's what I did with the one that aired just today. And that helped me find it quickly. It reminded me to go watch it. So,
yep. I got some other stuff. Jake Hirschman's tackle organization. I've done a lot with Jake this fall.
I got to have him on too. It was funny. He was talking about when you were talking about, he was talking about having to dead stick a jerk bait, and it was killing him. But you know, obviously he was doing it and you know, learning it. So I definitely want to have him on and talk to him about that and you know, the whole process of
So most people naturally have an inclination to lean more towards power fishing or finesse. I naturally lean more towards finesse. He naturally leans pretty hard to power fishing, and it's won him some significant money in big tournaments. But the people who are the best, the Jody Queens of the world, the Russ Schneiders of the world, and I'm gonna throw Christine Fisher in there as well. They know how to switch from one to the other. They don't, maybe they specialize, but they specialize in both, not one or the other. And that should be a goal, to be able to, you know, to soak a hair jig as well as the is you can rip a jackhammer, you know,
right?
Just be able to do both and be able to recognize the right time to do one or the other. You know, that's the critical part. You know, I always wanted to, you know, to finesse all the time. And yes, I would always catch fish. I would always find fish finessing. But the biggest smallmouth I ever caught in the river was 6 pound, 10 ounces. And I was power fishing. The river was up and I was throwing a very large spinnerbait into a muddy water entity. And I got two others that were legitimately over 5. That was the River Bassin tournament in 2015. And Jed Plunkett and I set the River Bassin like team total for this series. We had I think it was 123.75 inches of smallmouth.
Oh my goodness.
Do the math. The other thing that I'm excited about, and I got into the fall doing some of this, and then I switched back over to my regular Susquehanna trips. But I enjoyed doing, I mean, it's unlocked the video that I have, largemouth feeding stations. You know, that video, that place was found by doing the things talked about in, what was the first one I did? I did it with Chris Watts. I got to back all the way up into like early October. The thumbnail says why every kayak angler needs a chainsaw.
I do remember that.
Well, the one right before that, or a couple before that, I had a creek exploration trip with Chad Hoover. He was in town, and we went and just picked a river and went. He's like, I want to do a river. I'm like, all right, it's been forever since I've been on the Rappahannock. I used to know that like the back of my head. I used to guide on it, but it changes so much. He's like, well, we're about down here. And we went back and forth. I'm like, dude, let's just find one we've neither one of us have been on. He's like, I'm game for that. And we did it. And like, I was able to get 3/4 of a mile up with him. And then we went back down and it was only 1/4 mile down. So we saw 2 miles of the river because we kept running into strainers. And I'm like, man, he stood on the log, the last big log, and caught like 5 or 6 of them just casting over with a whopper plopper. I'm like, you know, it's awesome over there because no one ever goes there.
Right.
And the light bulb went off. It was like, ding, I got to work. I got to do this. And I called up Chris and I'm like, I got a place that I want to go check out. And he's a tree expert. He's a, what's the term? Certified arborist in the state arborist. Of Maryland.
I was going to say, I thought it was arborist, but.
He brought his equipment and we removed some stuff and like it opened up and I won't tell you how many different sections that we've opened because I've had people, where'd you, no, don't ask me where I went. I'm teaching you the process. Don't ask me for where I went 3 different times to whatever river and cut up a bunch of logs and went out there and only caught a bunch of chain pickerel and dink bass. Well, you do 3 trips like that where you're on the road for, you know, 7.5 hours of the day to go fish maybe the same amount of time or maybe 8 hours. And you come back and you got like not enough to really edit a video. And then the 5th one you hit and it's like, oh yeah. This is it. In the category, the playlist that's in there is, I think I called it Water Trailblazing. And I think it holds a lot of promise for if you're willing to bring a saw, and I think you can even do it with a bow saw, with a handsaw, and open up water that no one else is on, small water. You can own it. I mean, it's all but private water. Like you get in there and you do the work. And you know, it, and it, it actually pairs well with what I've been doing with the inflatable kayaks, because the inflatable kayaks are lightweight. They go super shallow. You can hit a submerged log that's just like barely wet at speed and scoot right over it. If you have to portage around it, you can throw that thing up on the bank and drag it through the woods because it's easy. You know, in most of the inflatable kayaks that I've been messing with, and I've been with Trey Leach of Innovative Sportsman. He's got one coming out, and it is awesome. Like, I've filmed him because he's been one of my best torpedo dealers to kind of, you know, show off what's coming in early 2022, early next year. It's really cool. It's 14 feet long. It's fully tracked, and it's designed like around the Torpedo Ultralight 1103. But it's perfect for this sort of, you know, small water, skinny water, bringing the chainsaw, getting into places that other people don't get at. I think there's a whole lot of that type stuff in our tidal waters as you move, you know, throughout Maryland down into Virginia, I'm sure through the Carolinas, if we were to keep going further, that, you know, and it's the same kind of fishing I do with Tim Perkins for the spotted bass down in Alabama when I go join him. Small water fishing, and you just stumble upon areas that other people wouldn't bother trying. And right. It's amazing. It is amazing. It is just like untouched fisheries. And because people look at the bridge and they're like, that little creek, there ain't nothing in there. You sure? You think that, you know, there's a, you know, a 19-year-old spotted bass in there that's like legitimately over 5 pounds, you know?
Right. And hasn't seen a lure, you know, forever. So, you know,
right.
Going to be relatively easy to catch.
Well, yeah. On the right day with the right flow, with the right approach, if you move in slow and quiet, yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's still animals that can switch from predator to prey or prey, yeah, to prey, like where they're spooked, you know, pretty even easily. If they haven't seen much in the way of fishing lures. But
Right.
Well, yeah, the inflatable thing is cool because it's I've enjoyed fishing out of the Star Rival fish that I rigged up early last year.
I think Brad Hicks from the final cast segment has been rocking one of those for a little bit, and he's been singing its praises. So yeah. It's definitely something I'm potentially in the market now for a second boat. So I've been, you know, definitely checking that out. But now if you're saying there's something else coming that might be even better, I might hold off on that. So
they're both great options, but you for the inflatable kayaks, you want a K-Pump Mini. You can get them at NRS, and you want Terraid Type B, which I did a video.
I was going to say you did a video with that, right? Yeah.
With Jake saying, take a treble hook. And he just like, I gave him a new crankbait with fresh hooks, and I'm like, just swinging and banging it. I'm like, I want you to pop a hole in this. I'm going to fix it. And you're going to time me, see how long it takes. He wore his arm out before, and he just wasn't going to pop it. And I'm laughing. I'm like, you done? He's like, and he's just like, are you setting me up? I'm like, yeah. I filmed it. And he's like, okay, what are we going to do to pop a hole? I'm like, here's the pliers. So he took the pliers and just jammed in the treble hook and had this tiny little, you didn't even see it unless he cupped his, you know, cupped water up to it, and you see the bubbles coming out. Tiny mm-hmm. little hole. And he timed me putting the Terraid Type B patch, which held the rest of the day at you know, 3 PSI is the outer side, the outer tube you know, pressure. And then I went home and finished the video and did the full patch job with the Aqua Seal. So, you know, are they indestructible? No. Are they lightweight and go shallower than anything else? Absolutely. Do you have the stealth advantages over a regular boat? Yeah. When we hit a regular boat on rocks, fish are spooked and are scattered around. You rub up against a rock with that, you know, or even bringing the anchor up, hitting rocks in shallow water, or even bringing the anchor up. The anchor say you just want to position, you know, 10 feet this way so you can get to that side of the eddy, you know, you bring that anchor up and it, boom, it hits the hull as it comes up and you've spooked that hole. Everything there knows, oh, that's unnatural. We never hear that. They're afraid. They don't eat. You know, the inflatable, it just, there's no acoustics to it. It's even the hull slap is quiet. So shallow draft, quiet, lightweight, and just, and it's, it kind of, it's kind of like the difference if you're used to running rivers and banging into rocks as you're going through chutes and stuff. It's as though you've been driving your whole life a vehicle without any rubber on the rims, and then somebody puts a fresh set of radials on your vehicle and you're like, it can be like this? This is awesome. How have I not been doing this the whole time? Right? It's just, it's a gentler, quieter, shallower draft, lightweight, drag it through the woods. It's just better. Anyhow. But that's another playlist on the channel, is inflatable kayaks.
Yep. I Brad said that he watched that and that's what sold him on it, and he's been loving it ever since. He's, like I said, singing the praises. So definitely something I'm gonna check
out.
I
talked to David Foyt with NRS and he said that the successor or the next generation of the star rival fish is called the Kuda.
Okay.
And like Kuda.
Okay.
And but like they're not, I don't think they're doing until like well into the year, so.
Gotcha.
But I think that Trey will have some for pre-sale, you know, I think before the end of the year. So
okay.
Worth keeping an eye on Innovative Sportsman.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Okay. Awesome. Anything else you can think of, or I know I will get to let you, you know, plug sponsors and stuff. I know, you know, Torquedo has been amazing and I love watching you.
I'm going to plug not dying on the river this winter.
Amen to that.
Yeah. Dry suits. If you're doing it, I mentioned Chuck Earls. He's a kindred spirit for sure. He's up near Cleveland, and he goes out into Lake Erie and does the steelhead thing this time of year. And every time this year, once one of his rivers gets slushy, I mean, it just looks like, you know, a Slurpee, like a big old slushy, you know, snow and ice and chunks. And he does the whole, like, ST plunge, falls into it in his dry suit, and he comes out like, see, I'm fine. I didn't die, because people do die from hypothermia kayak fishing. And it's two things. It's not having had the practice of reboarding your boat, and then you go over in winter and that cold water hits your skin and you go, you can't help it. It's your reflex. It's the involuntary gasp. And you've just inhaled water. So your ability to breathe and exercise and swim and pull yourself up is hampered by your ability to take in oxygen. Coupling that with your legs, because you think waders are okay. No, you've just flooded your waders with 36 degree water. And they stop doing this when you want them to do this. And you die. And I lost a friend in 2001 to the river. He was a jet boater that didn't wear his life jacket. And I think even if he had it on, I don't think he'd have made it. But dry suits buy you that time to reboard.
Right.
You know.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, is if, especially if you're new to it, you know, you need to let people know where you're going, and it helps. It's really smart to go with other people. I will tell you, I'm not practicing what I preach. I go out on my own. If you're going to do it, find some spots where you stay close to your vehicle, where if you flip and you think, nope, this isn't working. You know, get to shore, slog up, you know, to through the woods to your vehicle, and get all your wet stuff. I mean, you know, stay close to a vehicle. You know, there is a video that I think next week as I'm running up to Chicago. I have on this computer, we're doing the, you know, I've uploaded all my clips, and one of them is all my different tricks for staying warm. And yeah, dry suit's part of it, but like a hot thermos full of water and in the different things I do to keep my hands warm. I don't know. I'll leave that for the video. But there are tricks to stay warm, but you got to have the dry suit.
That was a big purchase for me that really gave me the confidence, well, to at least feel like I wasn't going to die when I went out. You know, I definitely took it for granted the first couple of times, but just this maybe, I think it was early October, River Rescue here in York went out for two gentlemen that were out on their kayaks and fell in and, you know, for whatever reason, couldn't get back in, and they pulled them out. They went out and got them, brought them back, and they said the one guy was probably minutes from death, and that was in early October. You know, you just, you know, it, the river can kill you if you don't respect it, and I've heard that so many times.
I've been part of two different river rescues, not river rescues, but the search and rescue where you just assume that somebody is dead, and they are. But you go out looking to bring closure to the family. So dry suits. Yeah. It's I think one of those, if with your spouse, if you can get beyond the idea, well, just don't go in winter. You know, if you can get beyond that, I don't think you're going to have a really hard argument of, you know, this is like my seatbelt. You want me to wear a seatbelt when I drive? Yeah, cool. Well, this is it for me doing this thing that I want to do.
Right.
I need it.
Yep.
So
definitely think that's
good. Yeah, NRS makes some good stuff.
I was actually just looking at a different one that had a little bit different neck, because I have a Stolquist Easy, I think is the one I have, and it is rather constricting on my neck, but getting used to it. But I know I was just reading that NRS has one that it's one of the selling features is the neck isn't as, you know, chokeholdy, but
latex gasket. There are some out there that are like the spray tops that lace in with the bibs. My buddy Jed has a set of those, and there's this sort of interlocking thing of the top spray top on the bibs, and then the neck gasket is neoprene instead of latex. You know, it's, and I actually filmed a YouTube short with him on that, and he talked about it, and he's actually a Swiftwater rescue technician for the fire department down in Virginia. And what he'd said, and I think he's accurate with what he's saying, is that it really just buys you time. And he has not bought himself as much time as I have with my neck, latex gasket here and here. And everything else is sealed up.
Right.
But he's way better than someone out there with waders. So how much time do you need to not die? Do you know that? Have you figured that out? Have you actually, hey, it's the end of the day. Like I just said with my buddy Chuck Earls, you know, it's the end of the day. We're done fishing. I've put all my gear on my vehicle, and I brought a big warm beach towel, and I'm gonna lay it on the tailgate, and I'm done for the day, and sploosh, do it. It sucks. Your head and your hands get cold. You're wearing the dry suit, you're fine. It's unpleasant, but at least you've been there, and you're like, yep, it's going to suck, but it's not going to be as bad as death.
Right.
And hypothermia, like I've been hypothermic before, and it's terrifying and miserable. So, but But, you know, if you have the right gear, you know, it unlocks a really cool time of year to be on the river, where for the most part you have it to yourself and you see things like wood ducks and otters and fishers and minks and beaver and all manner of different birds that you're just like, you know, this is a different scene than I see here in April or as I saw in September, you know, and it's gorgeous. Like it's really a beautiful place, especially the Susquehanna River Valley. Like it's a gorgeous river to be on, especially in winter.
Right. It's definitely, you know, get that Zen feeling and just the peacefulness of it is, it's peaceful a lot of times even before that, but that just takes it up an extra notch when you know you're the only one out there and
And then the peace is disrupted when this little thing gets whacked by a 4-pound, 3-ounce smallmouth that goes, pow, hits it. And you're like, yes, this is why I came.
And it's amazing how warm you feel all of a sudden when that happens.
Oh, absolutely. You are no longer cold if you're catching fish.
Absolutely.
So,
all right, Jeff. Well, again, thanks again so much. Tons of great information there. Sometime if you're ever up in my area or looking for someone, hit me up. You know, I know I told Jake the same thing because, you know, if you're up by Jake's area, then you're not too far from me either. So,
right.
We'll definitely have to. I'd love to.
I usually run north of town.
Pick your brain.
Yeah, if you want to run north of town, I'll go with you sometime.
I would definitely run as far as you need me to run just for the experience and the learning. So let me know and I will take off if I have to and make it happen.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, man. Well, thanks again so much. Sean. No problem. Welcome anytime. And guys, make sure you check out the little stuff on YouTube. I'm going to post some links, a direct link to the page, and then a few of the videos that we talked about as well. But keep in mind the ones that he mentioned that are coming up. I know I definitely will subscribe to those and get alerts for when they come out because I'm always looking forward to learning new stuff. So thanks again, Jeff, so much. It's tons of great information, like I said. And until next time.
Happy to share it.
All right, guys. This has been the Bass Fishing for Noobs segment on the Paddle and Fin podcast, where we bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. Have a good night.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode on Paddle and Fin. Don't forget to go check out our website at paddlenfin.com. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel at Paddle and Fin. If you got a question, comment, want to hear from a future guest on a future episode, feel free to email us at paddlenfin@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Paddle and Fin on Facebook and Instagram. Shout out to our show supporters, Angler, the Angler Button, and App just makes for a better time on the water and creates a virtual logbook for every fishing outing out on the water. Shout out to Rocktown Adventures, located in Northern Illinois, for all your kayaking, camping, and hiking needs. Shout out to Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com.